Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Monday, the 6th of September 2010, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. This is episode 49 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to have a look at what's been called the largest UFO religion in the world, the Raelians. They preach a message of peace and harmony, and they're big into free love and nudity. And they're also strenuous promoters of science and technology and the way it can benefit humankind. So what's not to like about the Raelians? Maybe we should all be going off and joining them. Well, yeah, maybe. But first we'll have a closer look at who they are and what they actually believe. And then we'll decide whether to join them or not. Then in our movie review, we'll have a look at the latest offering from the British filmmaker Michael Winterbottom, The Killer Inside Me. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Okay, just before we get into our news roundup, I should first apologize for the fact that I wasn't able to present the show last week. I'm producing a play at the moment and I was just too busy with some deadlines for that. So Sonia Suter and Robert Bishop did the show last week. So a big thank you to them for babysitting Reality Check when I couldn't be here. They did a great job as always. Okay, now here's our LGBT news roundup for the last 2 weeks, as I missed last week's show. And let's start with two good news stories, both from here in Australia. Now, don't fall off your chair, dear listener. I know it's quite a shock to get good news when it comes to LGBT rights in Australia. But I'm happy to report promising developments last week in both New South Wales and Tasmania. Let's look first at New South Wales, where last Thursday, the 2nd of September, the lower house of the New South Wales Parliament voted 46 votes to 44 to approve a bill that would allow same-sex couples to adopt children. So a very tight vote there, but luckily it snuck through. Both Labor and the Coalition allowed their members a conscience vote on the bill, and encouragingly, both the Labor Premier, Christina Keneally, and the Leader of the Opposition, Barry O'Farrell, voted in favour. The adoption bill was actually first proposed 10 years ago by the independent MP, Clover Moore, and it's taken until now to finally get through. Well, it's through the lower house at least. It still has to get through the New South Wales upper house, and that vote is expected in the coming days. Let's hope it meets with the same success there. And let's also hope that our local MPs here in Victoria are taking note as well. So far in Australia, only Western Australia and the ACT allow same-sex couples to adopt. If New South Wales gets it, it will be the third jurisdiction. Let's hope Victoria will be the fourth, and that it will be soon. If you're tuning in Victoria, dear listener, do write a quick message to your local state MP and tell them you want action on this issue. They're facing a state election in less than 3 months, so they'll be paying particular attention to what you have to say to them right now. And by the way, dear listener, just for your interest, Clover Moore, who introduced the adoption bill in the New South Wales Parliament, is not only a member of State Parliament, but is also the current Lord Mayor of Sydney. And she's been in that position of holding both offices for the last 6 years. She must be a very busy lady. And I thought doing a weekly radio show was hectic enough. Well, she must be very good at time management. Okay, let's head south now across Bass Strait for our second Australian good news item this evening, which comes from Tasmania, where last Wednesday, September 1st, the lower house of the Tasmanian Parliament voted 21-3 to approve a bill that would mean that both civil unions and same-sex marriages performed in other jurisdictions will be recognised in Tasmania. Just like with the New South Wales adoption bill, the parties allowed their members a conscience vote. And also, just like in New South Wales, the bill will now advance to the upper house, where it will be voted on in the coming weeks. Tasmania has had a registered partnership scheme for same-sex couples since 2004. So effectively, what this new legislation would mean, if passed, is that same-sex couples with civil unions or marriages from other states or countries who move to Tasmania will have their relationship automatically recognised as the equivalent of a registered partnership for the purposes of Tasmanian law. And if the bill gets through, Tasmania will be the first jurisdiction in Australia to recognise same-sex marriages from overseas. The ACT recognises overseas civil unions, but not marriages, oddly enough. So this is not a huge leap forward, but still another small and important step in the right direction towards full equality for LGBT people. Let's just hope it gets through the upper house in the coming weeks. But whatever happens, dear listener, rest assured that we'll keep you informed of every important development right here on Reality Check. Now, from the island of Tasmania, let's head halfway round the world to another island, this one in the Caribbean, and I'm talking about the island of Cuba. Fidel Castro, who actually resigned as president of Cuba officially in 2008 and is now officially the first secretary of the Communist Party, well, Fidel Castro gave an interview last week to the Mexican newspaper La Jornada, in which he accepted responsibility for the persecution of gay men in Cuba in the 1960s and 70s. During those decades, gay men were rounded up as counter-revolutionaries and sent to prisons and forced labor camps. Castro apologized for this and said it was, quote, a great injustice. But he justified his behavior by saying that in those days he was preoccupied with other problems, mostly threats from the United States. Well, dear listener, what can you say about this story? All those people arrested, jailed, tortured, and killed, and now, 40 years later, he regrets what he did. Well, Fidel, it's a bit late now. Now, just by way of background information, Cuba actually decriminalized sodomy back in 1979 and is today considering legal recognition for same-sex couples. It has also offered free sex change operations for transgender people since 2008. So it's much, much better today on LGBT rights than it used to be. And this is largely due to the efforts of Fidel Castro's niece, who is Raul Castro's daughter, Mariela Castro, a tireless campaigner for LGBT rights on the island. And if you want an idea of what things used to be like back in the 60s and 70s, I can highly recommend reading the autobiography of Reinaldo Arenas, Before Night Falls. It's really a gripping read and a total eye-opener. Okay, finally, in other news, the LGBT pride parades are continuing throughout the Northern Hemisphere as people in that part of the globe make the most of the last few days of summer. Over these last couple of weeks, marches took place in numerous cities across the UK, including Manchester and Cardiff, and also Derry in Northern Ireland, which saw its first ever pride parade. LGBT pride marches also took place across Canada in Calgary, Ottawa and Quebec City. And perhaps the most significant pride parade of the last couple of weeks was the one that took place on August 25th in Kathmandu, the capital of Nepal. An estimated 2,000 people marched through the city, led by openly gay Nepalese MP Sunil Pant, who was riding on an elephant. Staff from the US and British embassies also participated in the parade, as well as an Irish MP and international visitors from 15 countries. Nepal actually decriminalised sodomy just in 2007 and is now positioning itself as a destination for international LGBT tourism. Following a Supreme Court decision there in 2008, the government of Nepal is currently considering introducing same-sex marriage and may indeed be one of the next countries to do so. Fingers crossed. Okay, that's all the news we have time for today. Let's listen to a song now, and when we come back, we'll undertake a skeptical examination of the Raelians, the world's largest UFO religion. Hey everyone, let's take off all our clothes and build a giant landing pad for the alien spaceships. Yeah, well, I'm fine with taking all our clothes off. It's just the building of the alien spaceport part that I'm not so sure about. Well, to find out what the Raelians are really into, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
All voices, our voices. Joy 94.9.
Cruising for joy? It's safe listening. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Clocks by Coldplay featuring the Buena Vista Social Club. And I played that song because, of course, the Buena Vista Social Club is from Cuba. And I wanted to recognize all those LGBT people who suffered persecution in Cuba over the last 40 or 50 years, and for which Fidel Castro is now very sorry. A bit late, but, well, I suppose better late than never. Okay, we now move into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And tonight we're going to head deep into paranormal territory as we take a look at one of the more offbeat examples of bizarre beliefs, the world of UFO religions, in particular the Raelians. UFO religions, you say? Religions in plural? Well, yes, indeed. Believe it or not, there are a number of so-called UFO religions. Most of them are wacky cults you've probably never heard of, but basically the thing they all have in common is the belief that extraterrestrials were the creators of humans or are somehow communicating with humans or controlling humans or testing humans for some higher purpose known only to the cult leaders. Perhaps one of the famous, or should I say infamous, UFO religions was the cult known as Heaven's Gate, which received great notoriety in 1997 when 39 members of the group committed mass suicide, believing that their souls would be transported to a spaceship that was waiting for them behind the Hale-Bopp comet, which was passing close to the Earth at the time. Another famous religion that incorporates beliefs in UFOs is the American religion called the Nation of Islam, currently headed by Louis Farrakhan. They believe that UFOs created the mountains on the Earth and that they'll come back to destroy the Earth on the Day of Judgment. And of course, perhaps the most famous UFO religion of all is the beloved Church of Scientology, with its wonderful stories of extraterrestrial civilizations, and of course, Xenu, the ruler of the Galactic Confederacy, and all that. But of course, the leaders of Scientology don't really like to admit all that to non-Scientologists and would probably be most upset to find themselves listed as a UFO religion. But one group that's not shy about their connections to UFOs and extraterrestrials are the group that we're going to be looking at tonight, the Raelians. Now, you may have heard vaguely of the Raelians as some kind of nudist cult that worships extraterrestrials. And yeah, that's kind of true, but I thought that tonight we'd have a look at the Raelians in a bit more depth and try to find out who they are, what they believe, and how they got started. So basically, the Raelians are a religious community with an estimated 60,000 followers spread throughout the world, with particularly large congregations in Japan and Korea, as well as in Switzerland, France, the United States, and Quebec. And their primary belief is that all human beings, in fact, all life on Earth, every species of plant and animal was designed by a species of extraterrestrials called Elohim. The Raelians are, in fact, the ultimate believers in intelligent design. By the way, dear listener, just in case you were wondering, the Raelians are also pretty active here in Australia. They even have a weekly radio show in Lismore in northern New South Wales, and they regularly participate in the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras as well. So how did this bizarre religion get started? Well, it's all thanks to a French racing car journalist named Claude Vorillon. Monsieur Vorillon had actually been a minor teen pop star in France during the 1960s. He then became a sports journalist so he could gain access to his real passion, the world of motor racing. Then in December 1973, when he was 27 years old, Claude Vorillon had an experience that would change his life forever. He was hiking around the crater of an extinct volcano in central France, and there he met an extraterrestrial named Yahweh, who explained to him the truth about everything in the world and the origins of all life on Earth. Claude described this extraterrestrial as being about 4 feet tall, with almond-shaped eyes and olive skin. I don't know about you, dear listener, but sometimes I'm a little disappointed with the lack of originality in people's descriptions of aliens. Anyway, to give you a bit more insight into this amazing, life-changing event, Why don't we hear about this strange encounter in Claude Vorion's own words? Let's have a listen.
I was a journalist and I was going to my office at about 9 a.m. in the city of Clermont-Ferrand, in the center of France. And then I went to a volcano named the Puy de la Solla in the mountain. I didn't know why I had this strong feeling to go to this place. And when I arrived in the volcano, I said, why am I there? I have a lot of work to do in my office. And then I saw this flashing light in the sky, very strong. And slowly appear something like a bell made of very shining silver metal, slowly coming down without any noise. So I was so happy to see that, because I said, wow, that's what people call a UFO, and it will disappear. And I was sure of that. But then it came slowly, come down and closer to me. It was maybe 7 meter diameter, and a trap door was open under the craft. And then I realized, wow, if it opened a trap door with a stair on it, somebody will come outside. So maybe it's dangerous to be there. So I was ready to run away, but I wait a little, say, I want to see. If I see any gun or anything looking dangerous, I will run away. But I wait, and I saw a small man coming outside. First thing I was watching was hand. Is there a gun? Nothing. Empty. And then he was walking toward me, and the face was so full of love, so peaceful, and like I felt love. And that was the beginning of the story.
So there you have it, dear listener, the words of Claude Vorion himself, who, after that encounter, changed his name to Raël, with two dots on the top of the E there, a little diaresis. And he became the founder of the Raëlians. And by the way, that little video clip, complete with spooky X-Files backing music, was found on the Raëlians' own website, rael.org. Definitely worth checking out, especially the two videos. Anyway, this little meeting with Yahweh on top of the volcano lasted for 6 days. And during that time, Yahweh explained to Raël, that Yahweh was a member of the extraterrestrial species known as Elohim, and that they had designed and created all life on Earth. And also that when the Bible uses the words Yahweh and Elohim to refer to God and other divine beings, that was just a misunderstanding. It's really talking about these extraterrestrials. But people back in those days didn't have the capacity to understand that, so they just called them gods or angels or prophets or whatever. And actually, Elohim is a Hebrew word meaning those who came from the sky. So there it was, a clue right there in the Bible, but nobody had realized until now. And in fact, the Elohim had previously sent 40 messengers to Earth over the last few thousand years, but they had all been misinterpreted as prophets or other religious figures, such as Buddha and Jesus and Muhammad. But actually, they were messengers from the Elohim. But the poor primitive earthlings of the time had not yet reached a level of civilization sophisticated enough to understand this. Until now. Well, until 1973, that is, when Claude Vorion came along. Now, it may interest you to know, dear listener, that all those messengers from the Elohim, the people that we call prophets, Jesus, Moses, Muhammad, etc., were actually created by the sexual coupling between a human woman and an Elohim extraterrestrial man. supposedly. So it's all been a terrible misunderstanding. When they said that Jesus was the Son of God, they didn't mean that he was the son of some kind of supernatural God, but actually the son of an Elohim, an extraterrestrial who came from the sky to give a message to humanity. You see, it's all been a bit of a muddle over these last few millennia, but finally it's all been cleared up now, all thanks to Claude Vorillon. Anyway, coming back to our main story, so after Claude Vorillon, aka Rael, had been told this startling truth, he was tasked with spreading the news among the world's population so that humans could prepare the way, finally, for the return of our extraterrestrial creators. Well, dear listener, I have to confess that I'm very excited by that idea, so I can imagine that Claude Vorillon was very excited too. So that's when he set up the International Raelian Movement and started to recruit followers. He also published a book in 1974 entitled The Book Which Tells the Truth, in which he revealed to humanity what the Elohim had revealed to him. And he also began raising funds to build an interplanetary embassy to receive our loving alien overlords when they return. But that wasn't the end of Claude Vorillon's encounters with the extraterrestrials. No, dear listener, in fact, the best was yet to come. Because on October 7th, 1975, almost 2 years after his first encounter, the Elohim came back. And this time they took Claude Vorillon with them on their spaceship back to their home planet. Can you imagine how exciting that must have been? And there, on the Elohim's planet, Claude met up with Buddha, Jesus, Moses, and Muhammad, as well as Confucius and even Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormons. And they all had lunch together. Wow, now how cool would that be? And then, after the Elohim brought Claude back to Earth, he wrote about this amazing experience in his second book, entitled Extraterrestrials Took Me to Their Planet. Yes, dear listener, I'm not kidding. That's what he called his book. I guess he wanted the title to be fairly self-explanatory. Anyway, in the 35 years since those fateful encounters, Claude Vorillon, Rael, has been travelling the world to spread the message that the aliens asked him to pass on to humanity. He's also written a number of other books during that time as well. These include titles such as Let's Welcome the Extraterrestrials, Sensual Meditation, Arouse Your Spirit by Arousing Your Body. I like the sound of that one. Now, there's also Yes to Human Cloning and Geniocracy, Government of the People, for the People, by the Geniuses. And of course, Rael himself is one of those geniuses. Another book is The Maitreya. Yes, dear listener, Maitreya again. We heard about him here on Reality Check a few weeks ago, and it seems that Claude Vorillon himself actually claims that he is the Maitreya, the last Buddha, or the last prophet, or something along those lines. Don't you sometimes get the feeling that all these wacko religious cults just copy their ideas from each other? Anyway, back to the Raelians. So, Claude's most recent book is called Intelligent Design, Message from the Designers. And yes, the Raelians are actually some of the strongest supporters of the intelligent design theory. and also, unfortunately, some of the harshest critics of the theory of evolution. Although their approach is a little bit different from that of the Christian creationists, because they believe that literally all life on Earth was in fact designed and manufactured in laboratories by extraterrestrials. And by all life, I guess that includes the 900 species of intestinal worm and everything. And believe it or not, dear listener, there are tens of thousands of people out there who believe all this and call themselves Raelians, followers of Rael. Now, there are a lot of other odd beliefs and features that the Raelians have, but there are a few unusual ones that I think are worth discussing in a bit more detail. So, first of all, there's that interplanetary embassy that I mentioned. Apparently, once people on Earth know the true story about the origins of life and have decided to live together in peace, then the Elohim will return. So the Raelians are very busy preparing for this momentous occasion by raising funds for the construction of a special embassy, complete with a landing pad on top that will serve as a spaceport for extraterrestrial spaceships. And when the Elohim do finally come back to Earth, they've promised to share their scientific expertise with us. And apparently, their technology is 25,000 years more advanced than ours. So I sure hope they come soon, because technology like that would come in very handy, I'm quite sure. Now, the only slight spanner in the works of this whole embassy plan is finding a country that will allow the Raelians to build their embassy on its territory. Apparently, their ideal location is Jerusalem. As if enough religions are not fighting over that piece of land already. But the government of Israel hasn't looked too favourably on the idea of the Raelian Space Embassy. A few years ago, the Raelians also started negotiations with Lebanon, but again, they couldn't arrive at any kind of final agreement. I don't know, maybe they should try looking a bit further afield, like, oh, I don't know, Nauru, for example. They seem to be open to the idea of letting other people use parts of their island in exchange for vast sums of cash. And speaking of cash, the embassy the Raelians want to build will apparently cost $20 million, and so they're constantly seeking donations towards the cost of this very worthwhile project. Apparently, the extraterrestrials have given us humans the deadline of 2035 by which to build the embassy. But the sooner it's built, the better, I say, because I want to get me a piece of some of that super advanced alien technology. So I wish they'd hurry up. Now, the other interesting and perhaps notorious feature that the Raelians are noted for is their extremely liberal attitude to human sexuality and nudity. And it's a very healthy attitude, in my opinion. Like a lot of the religious cults that sprang up during the 1960s and 70s, the Raelians are very much into the whole free love thing. And they make it a policy to deprogram new members of all the social stigma and repressive conditioning about sex and our sexual organs that occurs in most of the world's societies. They believe that people should be true to their natural sexuality and not stifled by social expectations and taboos. They promote an acceptance of masturbation, homosexuality, bisexuality, and nudity, and any form of safe, consensual adult activity is okay in their books. For this reason, the Raelians are actually quite popular amongst a lot of LGBT people. At Raelian conferences and retreats and other gatherings, the attendees are often naked and sometimes wear wristbands to indicate their sexual preferences, just so everything's up front. I like the idea, I must say. And spurred on by these beliefs in sexual freedom, the Raelians actually do a lot of good in the world. They're very big on distributing condoms around the world as a means to prevent sexually transmitted diseases and unwanted pregnancies. They also campaign to abolish laws that restrict people's sexual freedoms, such as laws against prostitution, pornography, and homosexuality. They've even set up a charity called Clitoraid, which seeks to raise awareness of the practice of female genital mutilation and to raise funds to build a hospital in Burkina Faso where doctors will try to rebuild the clitorises of women who have undergone so-called female circumcision. A very noble goal, in my opinion. In fact, it was their good work on LGBT rights that first brought the Raelians to my attention. Back in 2007, I was coordinating a global campaign run by Amnesty International for the decriminalization of homosexuality in Nicaragua, the last country in Latin America to still have a sodomy law. We were sending out urgent actions to get Amnesty members and other interested groups around the world to write to the authorities in Nicaragua to get them to repeal that horrible law. And believe it or not, one of the groups that contacted me asking for information about how they could help the campaign was the Raelians. So I sent them the urgent action to send out to their members. And believe it or not, dear listener, a few months later, in November 2007, the Nicaraguan Legislative Assembly abolished the country's sodomy law. Could it have been thanks to a little extraterrestrial help arranged by our friends, the Raelians? Well, I'll let you decide. So, at least there's one thing I can say. The Raelians may have bizarre and completely unsubstantiated beliefs about the origins of life on Earth, but when it comes to sexual rights issues, I have to say, they're fantastic. Perhaps, though, out of everything the Raelians have ever done, the one thing they're most famous for, the one thing that shot them to massive worldwide fame, was their claim in 2002 to have cloned a human being. The Raelians are actually very big into promoting science and technology. They're very much into genetic engineering and genetically modified crops, nanotechnology and materials science, research into nuclear power and cold fusion, and they're particularly interested in human cloning. They see cloning as the first step in a process through which humans can achieve some kind of immortality. A process described to Claude Vorion by Yahweh, through which our brains will somehow be uploaded to our new, fit, young, cloned bodies. Damn, I really want the Elohim to come soon. I could really use some of that cool technology. Anyway, back in 1997, the Raelians set up a human cloning company called Clonaid. 5 years later, on December 27, 2002, a Clonaid spokesperson claimed that a baby human clone, Eve, had been born the previous day on December 26. This announcement sparked massive worldwide media attention and loads of criticism against the Raelians, as well as ethical debates about human cloning in many countries. This revolutionary claim by Clonaid, though, was never backed up with any evidence and is now widely believed just to have been a publicity stunt for the Raelians. If that was its purpose, it certainly worked. That little episode turned the Raelians from an obscure cult into the almost household name that it is today. Okay, so maybe they're not that famous, but still, most people have at least heard of the Raelians today, thanks in large part to that human cloning stunt. So, the Raelians are certainly an interesting bunch, but is it right to call them a UFO religion? They are avowedly atheist. They don't believe in any kind of god or supernatural beings. They believe only in the physical, natural world, of which extraterrestrials are a part, apparently. And they believe in creating a paradise here on Earth through science and technology. So, are they a religion? Well, I guess that's a question of what definition you choose. But they certainly operate like a religion. They have a hierarchical structure of 7 levels of clergy, similar to a church. Each level with names such as trainees, organizers, priest guides, and bishop guides, with the so-called planetary guide at the top being Rael himself. New members of the sect must go through a baptism called a transmission ceremony, in which they recognize the Elohim extraterrestrials as the creators of all life. The ceremony also involves an official act of apostasy, that is, a renunciation of all other religions. Members are also encouraged to pay a monthly tithe to the movement in proportion to their income. So they certainly function a lot like a religion, even if they don't actually believe in any supernatural gods. So what can we conclude at the end of this official reality check examination of the Raelians? Well, I have to admit I have a bit of a soft spot for them. I mean, if I had to have part of my brain removed so that I lost the capacity for critical thinking and my tendency to question what people told me, and if I had to choose which world religion or cult I wanted to become a blind devotee of, well, I think I'd most definitely choose the Raelians. They seem to do the least amount of harm of most of the cults out there, and even do quite a bit of good. They get a big tick from me when it comes to sexual rights and the promotion of science and technology. And they're atheists and believe in living life to the full in the here and now and exploring all the pleasures our human bodies can give us. All sounds good to me. Well, they're not so good, however, when it comes to evolution, and it should be recognized that their interest in the promotion of science and technology is not based on rationality, but rather on the dogma handed down by their great leader and prophet, Claude Vorion. So, yeah, that's not so attractive. And of course, the whole movement is based on believing Claude Vorion's alien encounter stories, with absolutely no substantiating evidence, which is, well, let's face it, completely ridiculous. However, like I said, if I had to get part of my brain removed and choose one religion out of all of them on Earth, I think I would still choose the Raelians. They seem to me the best of a very bad bunch, and certainly the most fun. Now, just before we play our last song for today, if you have any questions or comments about something we've covered on the show, or maybe a topic you'd like us to cover, please feel free to send us an email. The address is realitychecktony@gmail.com. You can also visit our website too, that's realitycheckonline.net. Okay, let's listen to our final song, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review.
All day, all day, all night. Joy 94.9.
What's up? I'm Stan Walker, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. And the song you just heard there was Break Your Heart by Tayo Cruz. Okay, it's movie review time here on Reality Check, and the movie up for review tonight is the latest directorial offering from British filmmaker Michael Winterbottom, The Killer Inside Me. The Killer Inside Me is based on a 1952 pulp crime fiction novel of the same name, written by Jim Thompson, and is set in a small Texas town in the 1950s. It tells the story of the town's deputy sheriff, Lou Ford, played by Casey Affleck. Lou is apparently a pillar of the community, a reliable and thoughtful young man. At the start of the film, he gets sent to an old house on the outskirts of town to evict a prostitute, played by Jessica Alba. He ends up, however, beginning an affair with her. And soon, the sickness inside him is aroused from its slumber. You see, Lou Ford is actually a psychopath. Now, you may have heard the word around town about this movie. And the word is that The Killer Inside Me is an exceptionally, horrendously violent film. And I have to say that, yes, that's true. Be warned, dear listener, this film has two scenes of hideous, detailed, graphic violence against women. They are scenes in which women get punched and kicked to death. In one of them, Jessica Alba's face gets beaten to a pulp, literally. And in the other one, Kate Hudson gets punched in the stomach so hard that her bladder ruptures and she wets herself. Yes, dear listener, that's the level of violence and attention to detail that we're talking about. And I don't know if Michael Winterbottom now regrets including those two scenes in the movie, but The Killer Inside Me has been a huge flop. Mostly, I suspect, due to the bad word of mouth about those depictions of violence. The movie cost $13 million to make, and worldwide it's taken in just over $1 million. I imagine the producers are not too pleased about that. But it's a shame, really, because it is quite an interesting film. Not a great film, but I did quite enjoy it. And that's in large part thanks to the performance of Casey Affleck. He is such a captivating presence on screen. Ever since I saw him in The Assassination of Jesse James, I've been a big fan of his. And he's just as good in this movie as he was in that one. He plays horrible characters and he always speaks in that high-pitched, whiny, mumbly voice, but he's just so watchable on screen. I reckon he's one of the best actors working today. The movie as a whole, though, is not quite as gripping as it could have been, and my main problem with it was not the two scenes of violence, but rather the tone of certain key scenes in the film. The director keeps us somehow distant from the characters, so you never feel too emotionally caught up with what's happening on screen. I think it's a combination of inappropriate backing music and editing choices that prevent the film from being as dramatic and engrossing as it could be. Another problem is the fact that with their very strong Texas accents and their tendency to mumble, it's often difficult simply to understand what the characters are saying. And combine that with the fact that the movie is actually pretty complicated, well, the story, the plot, and, well, there are points in the film where you're not really sure what's happening and you start to not really care. And on top of all that, And without wanting to reveal too much here, there is a major twist in the final scene of the movie that, because of all the complicated plot beforehand, left me even more confused than I had been. And rather than thinking, oh, how clever, I never saw that coming, I was left thinking, huh, what was that all about? Still, I did generally enjoy the film. Yes, The Killer Inside Me is a shockingly violent movie, and yes, it is put together in an odd way that keeps you at a certain distance, and it is hard to follow the intricate details of the story. But still, I think I'd recommend this movie, mostly for Casey Affleck's amazing performance. And if you do happen to see it, can you explain to me, please, what's really going on in that final enigmatic scene? And that brings us to the end of the 49th episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 8 o'clock next Monday for our very special 50th episode. Coming up next, Cade and David present An Awkward Pause. Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.